This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from the all-new 2008 Cadillac CTS. Be an original. Visit Cadillac.gm.ca.
It's Monday, November 12th. Karlheinz Schreiber may be deported this week to face fraud and bribery charges. The German businessman alleges he once paid Brian Mulroney $300,000 out of funds Schreiber received from the Airbus deal. Currently, Schreiber faces deportation to Germany, although his government-issued ticket includes a brief stopover in Syria. This is The Current Podcast.
Good morning and welcome to The Current. I'm Kevin Sylvester, sitting in for Anna Maria Tremonti. I grew up in the United States, a little country to the south, you might have heard of it. Every Christmas, my Aunt Peg in Canada would send us 10 Canadian $1 bills, which was the gift that kept on giving, because that multicolored Monopoly money was worth more than the boring greenback. And it made me proud to be a Canadian as I flashed my crisp dollar bills at the corner store, bought some comic books, gum, and candy, and asked for change. Well, now the loony is playing the snowbird again, and we'll examine what that means to our psyche, the local economy, and the global economy. In fact, we'll start with the global and the U.S. perspective in just a minute, when I am joined by Thomas Walkham and Christopher Sands. Michael Adams will be by after them to talk about the psychological importance of a strong dollar, and in our second half hour, we will check in across Canada to see how the rise is affecting us from sea to sea. And I'm not talking about rising sea levels, but the rising loonie. Now, our final half hour will be given over to a discussion of peace. Is it possible in a world that seems torn apart by war? If so, how do we get there? Through a stronger military? Or possibly with no military at all? But we start with the loonie. Number one, with a wallet. Here on The Current. Well, what you think of one of the biggest news stories of the past few weeks depends a lot on whether you're looking up or whether you're looking down. In Canada, it's all about the loonies' seemingly unstoppable surge and all the nationalist pride and cross-border shopping sprees that go along with it. But in the United States, it's about the U.S. dollar's declining value against the euro, the yen, and a whole host of other global currencies, including the loonie. And that version of the story has some people wondering if the days of the greenback as de facto global currency are becoming a thing of the past, and whether that might mean that America's economic dominance is in decline. For their thoughts on the leaping loonie and the dwindling dollar, I am joined by two people. Thomas Walkham is a political columnist with the Toronto Star. He joins me in Toronto. Good morning.
Morning, Kevin.
And Christopher Sands is a senior fellow at the American think tank, the Hudson Institute. Christopher, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us from Alexandria, Virginia. Now, Christopher, I'll start off with you. The U.S. dollar's been falling steeply. Is this a sign of the weakening U.S. position in the world economy?
Maybe a sign of the changing U.S. position. Some of your listeners will remember that in the 90s, we were talking about the opposite problem. The U.S. was a net importer of capital, particularly investment that was coming from unstable and unhappy developing countries that was flooding into the New York stock markets, pushing up stock prices. People were quite worried. And the U.S. exports were so minimal that people thought this is unsustainable. What we've now started to see is an adjustment, and the question where this is the good news, a lot of developing countries' capital is going home because things are better in places like Brazil, China, India. Some of that money is repatriating. That's positive, even into Europe and Japan. The concern is that what should be a very natural transition to ease the dollar down, which and the boost in exports that comes with it is very welcome, the question is, are we going to manage this to a soft adjustment, or are we going to have a steeper drop? Will Treasury and the U.S. Fed lose control of the cycle?
This is all flowing around. Thomas Walkham, I wonder if you can maybe throw in your views on that.
Well, there's two things to say about the decline in the American dollar, and I think your remarks right off the top, Kevin, were apt, that what we're really seeing in the world is the decline of the American dollar. The rest of the world really doesn't care that much about the fact that the loonie's rising. It's the fact that the U.S. dollar is falling, not so much against the Canadian dollar, but against other major currencies like the euro and the yen. So that's part of the story. And the American dollar has fallen before against other major mm-hmm. currencies, and it's been adjusted downwards against other major currencies, most notably, I guess, in about 1985. What's different this time, and what's perhaps worrisome, is that countries which were willing to hold the American dollar as a store of value, because in some sense the American dollar has become, since the end of the Second World War, the equivalent of the old gold standard in the world economy. It's what it's if you want to park your dough in something that you will be sure holds its value, you park it in U.S. dollars. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing this time is there's a suggestion that some people who hold a lot of American dollars are beginning to rethink this, and particularly the Chinese. The Chinese hold about 2.45 trillion U.S. dollars. That's because they sell a bunch of stuff to the U.S., and in return, the Americans give them a bunch of pieces of paper called U.S. dollars. Mm-hmm. So the Chinese have been quite willing to hold this stuff because they say, okay, well, the American dollar, you can do anything with. You can go around the world. You can go to Fiji with the American dollar. You can go to Cuba with the American dollar. Everybody takes it. Once the American dollar, if the American dollar begins to slip too far, too fast, and people aren't always willing to take it, then the people who hold it aren't always willing to hold it. And we see the Chinese. There's talk of the Saudis thinking, well, hey, maybe we should price, and other OPEC countries saying maybe we should price our oil against a basket of currencies, not just the American dollar.
Well, even people are talking about the euro potentially stepping into the void here as well.
That's correct. And there's that supermodel whose name I now forget because I forget most things.
Brazil. I know that, yeah.
Who made the papers a few days ago saying, hey, I don't want to be paid in American dollars anymore. That's like being paid in Bulgarian levs. I want to be paid in euros.
I wonder, Christopher, is that an economic problem for the U.S., though, that China is talking about this, that people are talking about different standards, possibly the euro?
No, not really. I mean, one of the things that happens, especially for the U.S. economy writ large, is we want a stable global economy. And economists here, I mean, this is important to separate from, say, the political concern over the dollar, but economists know that it's better if countries are using a basket of reserve currencies. The U.S. was very much an encourager of the development of the euro. We've been talking to most of our allies and trading partners, including China, about managing this decline in the U.S. dollar, of allowing their currencies to appreciate. So the trend is one that we would like to see. You look at the consequence of this lower dollar, we've had higher exports in the last quarter than we've ever had, even in lowly U.S. dollar terms, in the history of the United States. And that has eased some of the pain of the manufacturing decline in the U.S. It's strengthened employment. We still have very low unemployment. And although we're worried about our credit markets, we're generally in the U.S. experiencing a very nice, extended, good period of economic performance that goes all the way back through the Clinton administration. I mean, this has been a nice period for us. And so far, everything is going well. But as Thomas mentioned, if the decline loses, starts gaining momentum and we start losing control of it, then there are some very negative consequences. And I think that's what we're more worried about.
And part of this that interests me, living in Canada but growing up in the States, is that when the loonie rises and we start talking about manufacturing versus exports and everything else, those are almost like a whip action with our economy. Is the U.S. more, and this is a question to both of you, is the U.S. economy more diversified so it doesn't feel the whipping the way we do in Canada?
Yeah, it's essentially America's the biggest market in the world, the American domestic market. Exports are important to the U.S., but not as important relative to GDP as, mm-hmm. as to Canada and other exporting countries. But Chris's point is quite correct that in a normal sense, to devalue your currency or to allow your currency to devalue is actually always good for a country's exports. And so it helps America's exports, because when you sell stuff abroad worth, you know, one American dollar, now, of course, it's only worth whatever it is, you know, it's worth much less than it is. Sorry, I get it all buggered up. Frankly, it's worth much less than it is in other countries like Canada.
Yeah.
So you do well, and for a normal country, a small country like Canada. When we devalue our currency, and Canada has historically always engaged in competitive devaluation to help its export industry, people complain a bit, but they don't care that much because we're small. But when the U.S. does it, it's a big deal. And you saw that with when the French President Nicolas Sarkozy came to Washington just a few days ago, and he said to the American Congress, hey, now watch it. Watch your dollar. Watch this competitive devaluation we think you're doing. Because if you keep doing this, we've got to react. You know, we, Europe, have to react. And that could lead to an all-out trade war or extreme trade problems and economic problems in the world. So you've got to really, when you're the U.S., and you do this kind of stuff, you've got to be very careful. And that's above and beyond my first point, which is the store value argument.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you say that could lead to war, that's Sarkozy, that's a very tough phrase to use, international trade war. How much of this, Christopher, is the U.S. actually doing in by design? The dollar's decline is something, like you said, that is being designed to you know, people were demanding this, it's helping exports, those sorts of things.
Well, I think part of it is where, as I mentioned at the outset, is where developing countries are going, where capital is flowing and would flow anyway. And the other part of it is the position of the U.S. Treasury and the Fed in terms of whether they want to allow this or try to put the brakes on. And they can do a little bit on the margins, but some of this would be happening anyway. I think a lot of people in the markets had been concerned that the U.S. dollar was so strong for so long that it was actually making things difficult for some other economies. But just to flash back, there are two things worth mentioning here. One is that the U.S. decline, the dollar decline in the U.S. is half the equation. Canada's rise, the rise of the Canadian dollar, is partly the result of commodities demand. Energy, minerals, other things, natural resources that Canada has in great quantity. That's been tremendous for Alberta. It's been tremendous for some parts of Canada. And if you go back to the last high period for the Canadian dollar in the 1960s, you would see a natural and quick equilibrium established because the high Canadian dollar meant was reflected in high commodity prices that were higher, plus the dollar premium, and American demand would drop off. In 1968, the U.S. consumed half of global commodities. Our economy was that big relative to everyone else's. This growth in the developing world, which we all want, we want to see those countries get richer, means that now developing countries represent about 43% of global commodities demand. And so the result that we're facing now is that where Canada and the U.S. used to maintain a nice stable equilibrium, we don't adjust back as quickly because the U.S. is a much smaller demander of commodities than it used to be.
Is this a danger sign for the Canadian economy then in the next few years?
Well, it's both, really. I mean, Chris's point about diversification is true, that one of the reasons why we would normally expect to see the Canadian dollar move in lockstep with the American dollar because we're so tied into the U.S., and the reason that it hasn't is because the price of oil is so high and the price of other commodities. Chris is quite right about that. And some of those, and part of the reason is the demand from new markets like China. So I guess for a trading country like Canada, the good news is that our markets are being diversified. The bad news is that we are still very tied into America. So if what's going on, and this goes far beyond the question of currency, but if what's going on in international markets like international credit markets, this whole mortgage stuff and everything else, the housing slowdown in the U.S., if America gets into serious trouble, we get into serious trouble, particularly central Canada. There's always two economies in Canada. There's the manufacturing economy, which is largely southern Ontario, and then there's the resource economy, which right now is Alberta, but used to be Alberta, B.C., northern Ontario. And they at some sense, work at odds against one another. So if the U.S. really goes into serious trouble for one reason or another, the manufacturing economy in central Canada will be in trouble.
I just want to throw a last very quick question to Christopher then. You mentioned consequences and easing the drop. How does the U.S. do that over the next few years so that Canada doesn't get swept under the tide?
Well, it's going to be very tough. I mean, the U.S. economy is like, you know, Rocky, and I think the last of the Rocky movies. He's had taken a lot of punches. We had September 11. We had the Hurricane Katrina disaster. We've had
the war in Iraq.
The war in Iraq, which means high military spending. We've had quite a few blows to this economy, and yet the U.S. has been able to hold up pretty well. The big question is how long we can keep doing that, and whether this currency adjustment, if it runs a little bit out of control, could put the U.S. economy on the mat. I think the first concern for U.S. policymakers is just keeping the U.S. economy humming. And if U.S. demand stays strong, although it'll be hurt a little bit by the fact that Canadian exports are a little pricier, the pressure on the Canadian manufacturing and Canadian service sector would be that much more productive. Mm-hmm. As long as this isn't sudden or it doesn't sweep too quickly, I think Canadians will adjust and we should be okay. But it's going to be tricky, and I think this is one area where the U.S. is going to need all of its allies, especially its G8 allies, to help it manage the relative value of the U.S. dollar. We're going to need a lot of coordination from central banks to be able to get to that sweet spot where we all want to be.
Well, a story to continue following. Thank you both very much for joining me this morning.
You're more than welcome.
Yep, thank you.
Thomas Walcombe is a political columnist with the Toronto Star. He joined me in Toronto. And Christopher Sands, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. He was in Alexandria, Virginia. This is The Current on CBC Radio 1. So let's switch to this little psychological side of the story. You know, what's going on when the U.S. dollar has become a 94-cent weakling? Is that a psychological boost to Canada to be kicking, I don't know, maybe a bit of sand in Uncle Sam's face? A little payback for all those years when the loonie was the butt of jokes. I mentioned Monopoly money earlier on. Well, Michael Adams' specialty is how Canadians and Americans relate to each other. He is the author of Fire and Ice, The United States, Canada, and the Myth of Converging Values, and most recently, Unlikely Utopia, The Surprising Triumph of Canadian Pluralism. Michael Adams joins me from Toronto. Michael, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Well, it's interesting. There has been a tone, certainly in the news coverage, of a kind of a national pride, an in-your-face. What is going on with the psychological impact of the rising loonie?
Well, I don't think the Canadians are wanting to get on their high horse too high because, you know, we'd spent, half a century developing a moral superiority over America. We were the quality of life champions. They were the standard of living people. Our tradition of peace, order, good government was pretty, you know, that was something we were proud of. The Americans are life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, which is pursuit of materialism. So we always felt that they knew how to make a living. We knew how to live.
Hmm.
But now somehow we won the lottery, but we didn't know we bought the ticket of being actually having a financial advantage over the Americans. And yes, you're right. We've gone from being the northern peso to the northern super loony. But the Canadians, you know, they're going to know that they're going to feel ambivalent about this in a couple of ways, I think. Number one, they're kind of wondering, well, what have we done to deserve this?
Very
Canadian
response.
Is it a measure of our virtue?
Yep.
Is it a measure? And we said, well, actually, it's not a measure of our virtue. It's our good luck in landing on this piece of real estate. And as Chris Sands was saying, you know, and sort of collecting rents for sending resources around the world. And so that doesn't make you feel, makes you feel lucky, I guess, but it doesn't make you feel very virtuous. And of course, the irony behind that is that a lot of what we're sending are, you know, oil, and that's causing greenhouse gases to be created. So the Canadians are kind of thinking there is maybe some clouds in the silver lining.
Well, and one of the things there in that conversation with Thomas and Christopher was the whole idea that, you know, don't fool yourself, Canadians. This is still an American thing that's happening. We're just kind of riding along, going along for the ride on this one.
Yeah, and that's sort of comfortable for the Canadians to believe that. And so we don't get too cocky about it. And if we did, we know God would be watching and would take it away. So, you know, we're a bit superstitious on that. We're probably comfortable, you know, being in the 90s somewhere, a little bit less. But and then you get more sophisticated arguments, like when the dollar is great, that allows us to buy all those iPods and other stuff. It's great timing for Christmas, assuming our retailers, of course, pass along
the savings,
the relative advantage that we get with our strong dollar, and there'll be a lot of pressure on them to do that. But then there is a hidden sense of, wow, those manufacturing jobs have been slipping away, a quarter of a million lost in Ontario in the last 3 or 4 years. And, of course, then we say, yeah, we've lost all those jobs, but the unemployment rate went down. So the ordinary person is really having a little trouble with economics 010, trying to figure out what all of this is about.
Trust me, I am as well. But I guess another thing, though, is if one of the other things Christopher Sands was saying is that the U.S. is changing in its role globally economically, mm-hmm. that it's no longer the dominant force, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
What does that do to us? Because in some ways, we're kind of like the sucker fish on that shark.
Well, you know, we're in the process of figuring out what Canada is, and it's a bunch of economies kind of collected together. But you know, one area doing very well, another area not doing very well, resources versus manufacturing, and so on. And then we've kind of assumed the Americans were just there to buy our stuff. You know, with our auto pack, that's sort of the backbone of Ontario's economy, buying the oil and gas from the West, lumber from the BC, etc. And, you know, we're kind of reliant on them to be, you know, the economic powerhouse. And but over time, I guess, with the rise of the other countries, the third world and so on, we're selling more to them. So that's probably a good thing. And then, of course, that, you know, Canada relating to the world actually plays nicely into this, the new awareness of the multiculturalism that it's we've got people from 200 different countries. So Will we develop an image of ourselves as being actually a very creative country with a great ethnocultural racial mix that actually would be a competitive advantage in doing business with the world?
Well, this ties in perfectly to our next half hour. Michael, thank you very much.
Oh, that's great. Good talking with you.
Michael Adams' new book is Unlikely Utopia, The Surprising Triumph of Canadian Pluralism. He was in Toronto.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.